From the racetrack around Australia, here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
The GMC 400 has been run and won, and in the studio at the GMC 400 media office at the Albert Hall is Colin Ford and Peter Norton. And Colin has with him Stephen Johnson, the winner today, who has got a number of monkeys off his back for this weekend's racing.
I've got no idea. You know, we've just really worked hard all year, and decided at the start of, or at this race, sorry, last year that, you know, I was going to turn it around and get some results, because I was sick of running midfield and struggling at that. So this year has been a big turning point for me. I've really put in a big effort, and I'm going to continue putting in more and more effort. And, you know, if it goes along the way it's going, I think we could be in a good shot for the title at the end of the year.
Mm. Now, you started off the weekend really putting the mark on it by getting pole position in the top 15 shootout. From that point on, did you think, well, okay, I've got a real chance for this weekend?
I thought that we had a good chance coming down here before I even arrived here. You know, I actually told Dad last week that you can guarantee that I'm going to get you a win this weekend, and that was quoted in the papers even before I came down. So, you know, I was very confident coming down here. Wasn't quite sure about pole position. It's usually not my forte, but, you know, I've really tried to drive differently, drive smoother, and really make a big effort in qualifying as well as the races, and, you know, it's paying off. So ever since we were first and third, I think, in the second practice session on the Friday, and then pole second in qualifying, official qualifying, you know, I thought that we had a good chance for the whole weekend, and then to top it off with a pole position the next day in the 15 shootout was just unbelievable.
When you look at it, a few weeks ago, Hidden Valley, Northern Territory must have been the absolute lows. You've now gone to the absolute highs. The mood swings within the team, what have they been like?
The team's been fantastic. I mean, I cannot fault the team. All the guys are actually commenting on how much Craig Lowndes alike I am this year. Now, Craig, is, as you probably know, is one of the nicest guys you'll meet. You know, he's a good friend of mine, and he's always got a smile on his face no matter what. He's, you know, when he rolled over in the other car in 98, something around there, you know, and he had the broken leg, he's back at the track, signing autographs, smiling and carrying on, and that's what I've been like this year, and that's been the difference. It's a different attitude. All the guys are fully behind me, 100%, and really, their attitude, even at Darwin, where they did four engine changes in 2 days, I mean, that's a massive effort. And, you know, they were buggered, as you would be, but they were still smiles, and we still had a beer at the end of the day on Sunday night, and they were still all cheerful and excited to go for the rest of the year.
Mm. Now, in terms of the final race day, which is the feature race, your third place there, Garth Sander in front of you, Scafie out there that just probably in the distance, visible from time to time. How much is it that the racer says, okay, now I've got to figure out between going for the race win but going for the win overall for the day?
That was a hard decision, really. It's one of those situations where, you know, I don't do silly things at the best of times. You know, I don't fight on the inside of people and take people out. If I'm going to make a passing move, it's going to be clean and proper. I don't think I can remember taking myself out in a passing move, and you know, that's just not in my nature. You know, I'm a hard racer, and yeah, for sure, I'll give as much as I get nowadays. But you know, if Garth made a mistake, just like Craig Lowndes yesterday when I was racing in the first race, there was no way Craig was going to get past me because I wasn't going to make a mistake, and Craig's not silly enough to take somebody out either. So really, to be behind Garth, if Garth slid wide, had a moment, I would have been straight down the inside, but he didn't do it, to his credit, and he drove very well, and that's the best I could do. Our car was probably 3/4 of a second a lap faster than his, but and I think I could have caught or been up there with Scafie, but you know, all ends well, doesn't it?
Mm. Okay, so on this track, it's not one of those things you'd risk, because the fact is the concrete walls would punish you heavily.
That's right. I mean, Garth made a slight mistake into the second last chicane, a few laps to go, and I almost had a run at him, but yeah, he blocked fairly quickly, and you know, that was it. That's the only real opportunity I had. I was faster, as I say, but You know, you can be fast, and you can be 2 seconds faster than somebody doing a pass them.
Now, of course, the emotion when we saw you get out of the car, your dad, your mum, the rest of the team, obviously a very proud moment for you and for the family.
It was. I think I've got 3 ducks off my back this weekend. I've got the qualifying duck off my back, I've got the race win duck off my back, and I've also got the round win duck off my back. So, I mean, that's a massive weekend in anyone's books.
Now you've got the biggest duck of all, the Bathurst win, haven't you?
That's right, that's right. I mean, not sure who's driving with who as yet, but you can be sure that if Paul and I end up driving together, we're going to be a damn hard combination to beat at the long-distance races.
I know I'm probably going to put my money in centre bet then, for sure. Stephen Johnson, congratulations on your win today. I think there's probably a lot of people out there, the Ford fans are going wild for you, and we're giving them a new Ford legend, another Johnson.
Thank you.
Stephen, congratulations.
Thanks very much.
In fact, Colin had an opportunity also to catch up with the man who really turned his season around so far this year in as much as Garth Tander. He has got back into the points after a very impressive drive, which has seen him finish second place overall on the day.
Yeah, it's obviously a big points weekend, so it was quite important to make sure that we scored some good, consistent points this weekend and try and keep the car as straight as possible and really put a good result together. And, we managed to do that, stayed out of trouble for most of the weekend, and, ended up second, so obviously really happy with that. It's been a pretty tough slog this year, so it's good to be back.
Did you have a feeling that maybe you might have had that dreaded Bathurst winner's hoodoo, it sort of stuck, but now you've broken that?
Yeah, I think it's more, we probably outsmarted ourselves technically with the new powers this year. We slowly got them back on board, and the car itself this weekend was exceptional. It was really good to drive, quite easy in the tough conditions like this, so, I'm really full credit to the boys that work on the car. They've done a sensational job.
Do you think Gary as well played his part with some good pit calls for the pit stops?
Yeah, we made a strategy with my engineer before we went out, and we knew what we wanted to do. All our strategy this weekend erred on the safety side of things. We weren't really being too courageous. We wanted to make sure that we had all our ducks in a row in case the safety car came out. That managed to work, and we benefited from that quite substantially in a 50 lap race today. So, the strategy was good. It wasn't exceptional, but it did the job.
Now the next race is over at Barbagallo Raceway, Western Australia, your home state, your home track. No doubt this gives you a bit of a push and a high to go on with.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. Obviously, home race. Family and friends are all there, and a lot of local support. So the car was really good there last year. The car's great here now this weekend, and it's been it was good at Darwin so early. We've got a strong car now, so I can't wait to get back there and hopefully get on the podium.
So do you have the secret weapon of Mum's home cooking when you go there?
Absolutely. I go home and have 4 or 5 roast meals, and they're the only roast meals I get for the year.
Now, one of the questions that have been asked around the place is, of course, the changes they've made to the Canberra circuit this year. How do you find those changes have helped?
Oh, they've helped quite substantially. Lap times are obviously faster. We're sort of 2-3 seconds a lap faster now. But just the passing and the vision, you see a lot further up the road now. And obviously a lot more passing opportunities provided some more exciting racing, not so processional. And obviously there was less safety cars and less carnage this year. So really I think they've done a fantastic job. And it's pretty tough to work in the confines of the circuit here, and they've done what they can quite exceptionally well.
No doubt that there'll be a couple of areas where the drivers will probably have a few words to say after then, say, look, if you can just take this back another half a metre here or what have you there, it'll improve things a whole lot better.
Oh, yeah, we race drivers, we like to whinge about anything. So, in a perfect world, you'd like to move everything back, but obviously you can't. And, we realise that we have to race the conditions that we have, and, they've done a great job here this year. Obviously, they'll make improvements for next year as well. So, I think they're doing a great job here.
Well, Garth, congratulations on your second place today, and naturally enough, Craig, it has been a very exciting weekend of racing. All categories, including the V8 supercars, of course, the Formula Holdens, we'll have some stuff from them on later on, and Procar, naturally enough, with the Nations Cup and the GT Performance categories. Some great racing going on there, of course, some drama as well, with Mark Noski rolling his Mustang during the weekend, Craig Baird doing the mad overnight flip up to Canberra and doing quite well to get into a second overall weekend. But as it was, we were able to catch up with a few people a little bit earlier on there in terms of the event. What we have got, Peter, is a few people you were able to catch up with.
Yes, there's quite a few bad luck stories throughout the field, particularly some of the Ford drivers who were showing such amazing speed and promise in the through qualifying, through the top 15 shootout, race 1 and race 2, some of the names that really are quite high profile were right there, including Stephen Johnson's teammate, Paul Radicic. He had some problems in that very last race, and I caught up to him just a couple of minutes ago, and we had a bit of a chat about how it went and what went wrong.
No, first 8 laps, got a great start, led comfortably, everything's going good, and all of a sudden I dropped onto 7 cylinders.
Now, most people, when it drops onto 7 cylinders, would either put it away for the day or slip back hopelessly through the pack, but you stayed in there.
Oh, geez, I was pushing it hard, and, you know, we get to a straight and the other guys would just close right up on me, but a little bit of manoeuvring, put in the car in the right spot and just pushing really hard through the corners because it lost all its low-down horsepower as well as top end. So a little bit lucky to finish, but we finished and scored some good points. So, you know, something good has come out of the whole weekend.
I guess that is the important thing, finally to bank some decent points, and now you can move on to the rounds ahead.
Yeah, that's right. It's what it's all about, and you know, we're still quite a long way off, but it's the way the year's gone for me, and I'll keep battling.
But you've definitely got the speed, and we look forward to following your progress throughout the season, and particularly at Bathurst.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Appreciate that.
Yes, Paul Radicic was mentioned a bit earlier in the weekend about him being consistently inconsistent. He shows great promise in the speed, but you know, with a decent length race, he really does seem to struggle to be able to put together the whole race, whether it is that his driving might be a little bit too aggressive at times, or whether it's just plain bad luck like he had this weekend. He was really putting in a fine effort for the weekend, but for this time it was mechanical dramas that took him out.
Yeah, look at him where he had provisional pole on Friday, and then of course it all went pear-shaped during the top 15 shootout. From there on, his weekend sort of went from good to bad to, oh, well, I'm at least still going around.
Yeah, that's right. The top 15, he admitted that he was just too hungry for that pole position, and he looped it. But from 15th, he recovered very well in that first race, and also did a fine effort through the reverse grid. But unfortunately, it didn't really come together for the big one. He did get some good points out of the weekend, though, and that can be a foundation for him to rebuild the rest of his weekend.
That's right, if you consider that the car that's running on 7 cylinders, and he finishes 7th.
A bit poetic there, isn't it? But yeah, he really was working hard to keep it in that 7th position. But that was good to see him finally get some points in the bag.
Interesting comment too from Dick Johnson in relation to the fact that one of his Falcons running on 7 cylinders finished ahead of a lot of Holdens.
Oh, what a classic. I like that one. I might remind a couple of Holden fans that one myself. I managed to catch up to Dick Johnson just a couple of minutes ago as well, and as you can imagine, he was very proud, and here's what he had to say. Dick Johnson, no doubt a very proud day.
Well, it's been a fair while coming, and you know, at least now he's tasted what it's like, and I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to want a fair bit more of this, I can tell you.
Yes, and pretty a good performance from both of your team.
Yeah, Paul was very, very unfortunate because, you know, his engine dropped onto 7 cylinders, but he kept soldiering on, and I think he did a fantastic job to come 7th.
And move on to Western Australia for the next round in a couple of weeks. There's no reason why we can't have more of this.
No, there certainly isn't. I think the cars are, you know, getting better and better with each outing, and I think that when we go to Perth, I hope we'll be very, very competitive there as well.
And, of course, your team had problems in the heat in Western Australia. I guess that's all sorted out now.
Oh, and Darwin, yeah, that's all been sorted out. That's a lesson very well learned, I can tell you.
And you Queenslanders complain about the cold weather here in Canberra, but it's actually worked out pretty well for you.
Oh, I never complain about the cold weather. I just say it, when it's hot, I say it's hot, and when it's cold, I say it's cold. But, you know, it's amazing. Motor racing is probably one of the only sports where you can have the lowest of lows one meeting and the highest of highs the next.
Well, we'll let you get on and celebrate that highest of highs.
I certainly will.
Yes, Dick Johnson and the team there will be celebrating big time tonight.
Yeah, I believe Stephen made mention at the press conference that they'd obviously be consuming one of the main sponsors for the event and also one of the team's subsidiary sponsors' products in a reasonable amount of quantity tonight, but they're going to do that when they had returned to their accommodation so they wouldn't be drinking and driving.
Yes, there's some lessons there, of course, which we don't need to really ram home. Everyone out there listening knows the importance of not drinking and driving and driving back from the circuit quite safely there tonight.
Yeah, and the other thing, of course, the guy that was really sort of putting in the performance this weekend was Craig Lowndes. The one thing that has got me, and I must admit, I finally sort of gave in to my desire and got one myself. The biggest selling item, I reckon, this weekend must have been the Gibson Motorsport Craig Lowndes cap.
Yes, it's quite a striking cap too, the black and the different tones of black, and actually reasonably good value as well at $20, where most other teams are flogging them off at $25. So you've joined the army. Maybe it's a pirate army. We've got a red army, so being coloured black, it will be the pirate army. And yes, Craig Lowndes, he put a fine ambassador for whatever team he is in. Such a positive outlook, and really quite a miserable afternoon this afternoon. The pit strategy didn't go his way. It was his turn for it not to work, and I think all of the teams throughout the championship will have their turn at it not working out for them. HRT remains to be seen. They seem to be able to pull it out most times when other people can't. But Craig Lowndes showed that reverse grids don't have to be a disaster. He was one of a few drivers who pushed ahead quite well and made some great ground. And we did catch up to Craig Lowndes shortly after the race, and here's how he put a positive slant on things. Craig Lowndes, you showed the pace all weekend, but you didn't have that luck there in the end.
No, unfortunately not. I think we completed what we set out to do, which was get some good data for this weekend and this circuit. We're able to do that. Unfortunately, the end result was the finish, and we didn't get to do that. So that's probably the disappointing part. It's probably disappointing for the guys more than myself. But the car's still in one piece and in a straight form for obviously to go to West Australia now.
And it was your turn to get bitten by the gods of safety cars.
Well, yeah, I guess you know, our strategy was going well up until that point. So you know, that was one of those things. We had to really push hard on the restart, but unfortunately, you know, it was just one of those days.
How long until we see you in a brand new car?
We're hoping Calder Park, but most likely more like now Oran Park.
Well, Craig Lowndes, thanks very much for putting on a fantastic show for the fans.
Thank you very much.
So yeah, there you have it. We are waiting with bated breath for when he gets this new car, where they can reinvest all of that information that they've been gathering all year and you know, build their own masterpiece from scratch. And no doubt it's going to be fast. A little disappointing that it will be really towards the sort of final part of the championship. Oran Park typically very late in the championship. But look out when it comes, because it's going to be a ripper.
I'd say that definitely Fred Gibson will be putting a lot of his experience and engineering knowledge into that car, along with what's been gained from all the races to date. I'd say that car could be a potential weapon. Looking at some of the other cars that Fred Gibson has put together in the past, his own team, I'd say that's going to be so interesting. One of the most unusual happenings in this third race today was Marcus Ambrose in the Pertec Racing Ford Falcon, who on lap 45, coming down from State Circle down Flynn Drive, lost his rear wheel. Marcus Ambrose was the left rear wheel. He got it over to the side of the track, but the wheel kept going on its own. Now, it was quite interesting here in the media centre watching this when this happened, because there's the tyre going down on the curb, and all the media are glued on TV going, yes, yes, it's holding its line. And the thing kept rolling down and rolling down and rolling down until it got the chicane, when it hit the curb, bounced, and then landed neatly on top of the tyre barrier that's sitting there. And, of course, a great cheer, roar of applause, clapping, etc. And my comment was, well, there you go. There's some precision driving for you.
Yes, that was really quite remarkable. I watched the race from in one of the grandstands, and yes, the event wasn't lost on them either. Got a fantastic cheer, and I caught up to Marcus Ambrose after the race, and before we had the tape rolling, he was commenting to some of the fans that, yes, he was sitting in the car, he was watching it, he was glued to watching this along the way as well, and he did slip that he was hoping that it would hit one of the other competitors, which will remain nameless for the moment anyway. And as I said, we caught up to Marcus after the race. Again, he's a guy who showed fantastic speed. He showed you that what you can really do in a reverse grid race, right from the back, and I mean right from the back, because he didn't finish race one, and he really blitzed them all with fantastic strategy and fantastic car speed, and to really be up there at the end of that race two. But anyway, we caught up to Marcus after the event, and here's how he explained his weekend. Marcus Ambrose, you were one of the pace setters all weekend, but it all fell apart in that last race.
Yeah, really disappointing. You know, we had great car speed today, and the boys just did such a great job on pit stop strategy. You know, we've had a couple of really unlucky things happen to us today. You know, this is our learning year, and I'll come back here next year bigger and stronger, and no one will catch me.
Now, you had quite a few problems during that last race. Can you talk us through some of them?
Yeah, it all went downhill really in the middle part of the race there, where track got in the way, he just wouldn't move over, and quite uncalled for really that time of the race. I was trying to get away from scraping, and then that's why I lost the spot. But after that, we had a tyre go flat. Thanks, mate. Which is just one of those things. Must run over some debris. Came in and then went back out, and we had another flat again. I guess more debris, or something went wrong there. And then the last one, the wheel wasn't, was hurried to be put on and just fell off.
And now, of course, the one positive thing you take away from this meeting is your outstanding performance in the reverse grid race.
Yeah, that's great. But look, we did the same today. We came from 23rd, and we were winning. So, just that's all to the boys here. They just made such good calls and kept me out there and kept me flowing. And very, very important that, we work together and we go forward on this. We shouldn't have been back here in the first place. So.
And as you said before, you're just going to keep doing the same positive things, and it will fall your way very soon.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just keep working away, and results will come.
Okay, we'll look forward to you some great results in Perth.
Everyone out.
Yes, a couple of comments there relating to the crowd of fans that gathered around Marcus. He's really becoming one of the crowd favourites. Quite a few people there pushing and shoving, trying to get their way in for an autograph, which of course all these drivers are pretty good sports about, and they accommodate the requests of the fans. They go to quite remarkable lengths to look after the paying public who make it all happen for them, really.
Mm. And if we look at the results for the third race today, the did not start. Cameron McLean had damaged a strut, therefore they weren't prepared to damage another one. Dougal McDougall also did not start in the DNFs. Tony Longhurst, I noticed early on from that race, he was obviously one of the people that ended up in the great concertina effect into corner number one, because the first time his car came past, I saw the start of the race from the little flip-flop at the back of the old Parliament House. And it was a case that the number of cars that came through and their front bonnets were at pushed-up angles, and that they'd obviously been into people, but he was one of the ones that obviously had had a problem there. Jason Barguana, he went out only on lap 6. Then David Bernard in the Kalex Havilland car went out on lap 19. Greg Murphy, another car with a lot of heavy front damage on that car from, again, the old lap 1 concertina effect. And he went out on lap 31. Paul Wheel, he was actually doing quite well there for a while and seemed to disappear on lap 34. Not too sure what happened with him there. Craig Lowndes, of course, the whip went out on lap 35 after he was pushing quite hard there, and pity to see him go out after showing so well. Anthony Kratt, he was also DNF on lap 38. Brad Jones, after his team did an incredible job getting that car ready from lap 2, where he backed it into the Ford corner, I think it was. He went out on lap 42. Marcus Ambrose, he was the last man out on lap 45 with that wayward wheel. And one of the interesting stories, of course, 21 cars finished. Car number, the 20th finisher throughout that field was the number 46 car of John Faulkner, who has had what would probably be a shocking weekend, crashing it yesterday morning in the morning warm-up, and then having worked all through yesterday, last night, the first two races today, to eventually get the car ready in time for the third race.
Yes, what a marathon effort from the guys from the tape and also Faulkner's own team. It didn't come together very quickly for them, and they missed that first race this morning, but it was great to see them out there for the final race, and it was quite obvious that it wasn't handling particularly well. He was struggling, but he was out there, and I think that was really a trophy for the guys who worked so hard to get it back out there. It would have been a shame for him to pack it away. And, a bit of a crowd favourite there because of the great effort they put in.
Mm. Now, if we just look through the top 10 as they were, in 10th place was Stephen Richards in car number 6 for Ticket Racing. A bit of an up-and-down weekend for him. He went from reasonably set up on the grid, did well in the reverse grid race, but then this race it didn't show the promise.
Yeah, so many stories of showing promise but not coming together this weekend. And it was quite remarkable having the walk around the paddock area just a couple of minutes ago, seeing how many cars were damaged. And probably the only one that I could find that didn't have, as you were mentioning, so many of the bonnets pushed in as a minimum, one car that seemed to get through to race number 3 quite cleanly is a little bit ironic, because it is car number 10, the one that we always seem to be in all of the wars. It had quite a major rebuild itself, and that is Lapham.
The other car that was there in finished 8th, a car that finished in 9th, which is car 8, the way it works, Russell England, the Caswell Perkins Commodore, he actually was near the tail end of that race, about the last 10 laps. He was really pushing that Commodore quite hard to move himself up through the field. And at that stage, I'd moved over to the little chicane over close to the lake before they come onto the speed bowl. And he was really throwing it through there, getting a huge roar of approval from the crowd. And as they say, the eyes were on. But unfortunately for Russell, not enough laps to really make any effort there.
Yes, he was, of course, concentrating on the championship. And with a double points race, every position that you catch up can be very important towards the end of the year.
As we mentioned earlier on, 7th was Paul Rasich and the Shell Helix Racing Team Falcon. And 6th place, Steve Ellery, Super Cheap Auto Racing, another car that had front damage, and he also had a bit of back end damage, so obviously he was the meat in the sandwich at some stage in the race, but a very good performance for him, probably one of the best we've seen for him this year.
Yes, it's a team that has a great deal of promise, the Super Cheap Auto Racing Team, and yes, it's good to see some of these younger guys who have been in the sport for a couple of years. They've put their time in, and yes, it is time for them to rise to the top, and yes, they get a few more things right, we'll hope to see some more of these guys.
Now, 5th place, the 600 car, the Cat Racing Falcon of John Bauer. Again, John, a gritty driver. It seems to be the two, but he seems to enjoy the street circuits.
Yes, as you say, a pretty gritty competitor, and very hard to pass, particularly in a street circuit. And I think it was Steve Johnson who said earlier, you could be 2 seconds a lap faster than someone around here, and if they're particularly a clever driver and position themselves correctly on the track, there's not a whole lot more you can do about that. You're going to be stuck behind them for a while unless you can pressure them into a mistake. And John Bauer, with so much experience and talent there, it's going to be pretty hard to push him into a mistake.
Yes, a bit of a comment about John Bauer this weekend in the media centre. One of the media members brought in a recent press release from Tasmania that showed him as being one of the top 20 Tasmanians over the age of 50. John Bauer's not answering the fact that he's over 50.
Yes, that's right. That clipping says he's 58, and I find that a little bit hard to believe. I'd agree that he's in his 50s, but way up there at the top end, well,
I guess hope for us yet.
That's a good point.
Yeah. 4th place, the second of the Holden Racing Team Commodores, the Red Army was here, of course, in great numbers this weekend. The car of Jason Bright. Jason was doing very, very well. Yeah, this was getting himself up there. You know, he's really sort of started from the back foot this weekend.
Yes, using the terminology that I think was cited in V8X magazine, talking about Canberra Virgins. And he was probably one of the most notable ones who failed to come to grips with this circuit very quickly. Struggled quite a bit, but as is usually the way in the HRT, they keep working very hard at these things, and in particular for the longer race, get the strategy particularly well, take the blows as they come, but then learn from them and move ahead. And at the end of the day, he's bagged a useful amount of points. Could have been a much worse weekend for them.
And of course, if we look at the top three in the final lap, final race, it was actually sort of the reverse of the point settings for the weekend overall for the race. You know, we had in first Stephen Johnson, in second Garth Tander, in first Mark Scape, who's the race winner. But then if we look at the overall race weekend, the results are actually the reverse of that, with Stephen Johnson coming out on top. Garth Tander, he stays in second, but Mark Scape, the interesting part is, of course, he's improved his championship position. He's now just ahead of his teammate Jason Bright, who was leading the championship. And the win here this weekend for Stephen Johnson has actually moved him up to third in the championship, just ahead of Russell Ingall, and then fifth in the championship is Marcus Ambrose. So this weekend has really turned things around, but the thing is that the championship positions are still fairly tight, and with a few more races it could go any old way.
Yes, I'd have to say though, some of those drivers who have struggled in Adelaide and also now here at Canberra, they're starting to lose touch with the guys at the top. And unfortunately, they're people like Ambrose to some extent and Lowndes, that the guys who are showing some of the very fast speed, I guess Seaton's in there as well. He hasn't been banking consistently like he has done in previous years. He was quite disappointing out there. I think they got plenty of practice in pit stops on the Seton car. They're starting to lose touch with the championship. And the names that you've just mentioned, they're really the ones who are going to fight it out towards the end of the year, I think.
That's right. Well, Glenn Seton is finishing way down in 19th place. That's you know, fairly bad for him. Paul Romano and the other the sort of young Lions holding racing team, he finished down in 18th. Again, another very battle-scarred car. The front end of that car looked like he'd ran into a brick wall somewhere, but it was still going around. Tyler Mecklem in the Altitude Australia Commodore, he seemed to be doing a fairly good job holding everybody up.
Yes, but he was sort of almost staying out of trouble. Late in that final race, he had a bit of a mishap in one of the chicanes, but he came through with a reasonably clean car, and he's very young and sort of just coming into this category of racing. I think that you know, given some better equipment, he could be one to watch in the future as long as he keeps his nose clean there.
Paul Morris, he finished in 11th in his big Kev racer. Now, there's one that's been getting a lot of publicity this weekend. They had the camp quality of being in to see Big Kev today to get him to be the patron for a big barbecue they're running for camp quality later this year, and so he's going to be in the advertising and so on. But of course, that car there, that's a VT up against the VXs. Paul Morris is still waiting for his new VX. Probably Oran Park, the round which, talking to him over the week, we'll probably see in that car. He'll probably get a bit of a tart-up between now and then. We'll see the second car for the Big Kev Racing team with Matt Neal in it. So that's something to look forward to there.
Yeah, that's a quite an interesting team, that one, because they always seem to be one model behind what the big guys are using. And it seems strange because, of course, they've been such a dominant force in Super Touring, having the very best of equipment. It really is quite a battle for them. And they showed some good speed here at times throughout the weekend, although I think some of the drivers would say that he's one of the villains here on the street circuit, that once he has dropped that luck behind, he still wants to fight with people. And that sort of brings up some memories of Bathurst, where Matt Neal was wanting to play some games with the leaders as they came through. And I know, Colin, we could debate this point for hours on end, but I think that from some of the chat that I heard over the radio scanner, Paul Morris was one of many who have seen us a villain here.
Anyhow, we'll throw it back to Craig in the station now. Hopefully in a little short while we'll be back with Chris Nixon from Pro Car Australia, and we'll have a review of this weekend's racing from the GTP Nations Cup and of course the GT Performance category.
Inside Motorsport on Triple SFM.
Colin McRae has won his second rally in...
Whoever rates the scripts for these races, you know, really should be getting a race from the American Le Mans Series organisation. Tom Christensen going for 3 Sebring victories in consecutive years.
Tour de Penske, Elio Castroneves leads the final 51 laps and wins the 85th Indianapolis 500 mile race.
Don't be fooled by the competition. If it's motorsport, it's on Triple SFM.
Gravel on the Good Sports. Cram your morning from 6 to 9, starting with the latest news from the BBC Sports Newsroom, followed by an onslaught of local and national sports. Start your week with all the sporting news on Canberra's only sport and racing station, Triple S FM.
Inside Motorsport on Triple S FM. 8 years on, and it's still going strong.
They are struggling. They might just get Schumacher's car ready before it's before they head off. Irving's car, Eddie Irvine's car is a struggle. Getting the second cars ready is going to be a real struggle, and the rumour is out that
at the event this morning we had thousands of cyclists riding around the circuit. We've had hundreds of school children rehearsing for the opening ceremony, and the air and optimism and general support for the event is overwhelming.
We could be fairly easy on the day stages, but I was leading up till that last stage before the mill break and was concerned when Rick got back in front of us, so we decided that first night stage we'd give it a real good try.
This is Wim Percy from the Coca-Cola Racing Team, and you're with Craig Howard on Thunder on Sunday.
Well, joining us now on Thunder, it is indeed with great pleasure. I welcome the winner of this year's Daytona 500, a two-time winner, in fact, Dale Jarrett. Thanks very much for joining us.
The first move, and that was going to be the key, is trying to block the first move, because once he made that, then he really didn't have much help from behind in getting a push. So I knew that if I blocked that first one, that I was going to be okay. And I just wanted to get off of the second turn.
The one accident that we're aware of involved Parker Johnston. He was polling at last year's Marlboro 500, and he was seventh fastest in the rain-interrupted traction set.
You actually almost need to be an engineer just to run an oval, but... you know, I got a lot of experience there, and I think it's starting to carry over. We've had a little problem at PIR, but I don't know
now,
that was...
They've done a great job getting it all here, but like in the next few weeks we'll get better and better. It's good.
And that are you hoping you find a little bit more sponsorship to fill up those spare areas on the car?
Yeah, we've been, I said a few months ago, we've been talking to three or four people, so then we still are, and Seager was one of them, and they've come along
so
now.
There's a lot of talent in the young Jackson.
Yeah, it only really takes... you got to give him credit, this is his first year in the sprint cars, and there's plenty of other guys that I know of that have been racing for a lot, lot longer that haven't, you know, achieved as much.
Yeah, and whilst we're talking support races, Tiger on Wednesday was supposed to have their traction control test day. Now, what came out of that?
I'm not sure of the outcome finally. They play it pretty close to their chest.
Don't be fooled by the competition. For motorsport, it's Triple SFM.
Yeah, of course, one of the top support categories, actually two top support categories this weekend for the GMC 400 for the Vauxhall Supercars was the GTP Nations Cup and the GT Performance categories. And joining us now is the publicist for those series, Chris Nixon. Chris, your guys turned on some great racing again, didn't they?
It was a fantastic weekend's racing, Colin, but I suppose one of the most interesting aspects was that the recent front runners and championship leaders in some cases crashed out of the reckoning pretty badly.
Well, if we look at it, unfortunately, you know, Mark Noski had his crash in the Mustang at the what they call the Embassy Chicane there the other day during qualifying practice session. So that put him out of action. Craig Baird flown in. Paul Stokel, he had his problems. Everybody was having these problems that were going on.
Well, if we look at the Nations Cup situation first with Paul Stokel, who came into this weekend's racing on 217 points and well in command of the Maguire's Drivers' Championship. He scored pole position, everything was looking right for Paul until race one went on the formation lap around of the starting line. The drive shaft broke in the Lamborghini Diablo, he didn't even make the start. Race two, of course, that meant that he started from the back of the grid and in the course of working his way up through the field and incidentally setting a new lap record, he... tagged the tyres and then tagged the wall, and the Lamborghini lost the right front, left front wheel or upright. Unfortunately, the timing of the events at the Canberra Street Circuit is such that the officials couldn't allow him to remove the car before the start of the reverse grid V8 race. The wrecked Lamborghini sat out in a wayside somewhere and could not be repaired in time for race three. So the bottom line of the story for Paul Stokel is that he came into the championship lead, he picked up only 1 point, failed to start two races and crashed in the other race, and slumped from first to fifth in the championship. What a weekend.
I was actually talking to Paul yesterday, and he was saying the fact that, you know, this breakage that occurred on the car in terms of breaking the drive shaft has only ever happened to him in Canberra, and he reckons it's to do with the way that the roughness of the road and the bouncing off the curbs and so on. He said they went away last year, looked over everything, life, the components, that's only happened here in Canberra again.
Again, yes, and I suppose you have to understand that it's a 5.7 litre V12, and she's a pretty big thing, and if it's going to happen anywhere, I guess it's going to happen in Canberra, and I suppose in retrospect they'd be telling themselves that they should have changed the drive shaft after qualifying. But that's the way racing goes, and... Paul had won three races out of the four starts in the Nations Cup up until this weekend, so he clearly has fantastic pace, and I'm sure that with five rounds still to run in the Nations Cup Championship, we'll see that Lamborghini well and truly back up in the points.
Now, of course, the top three other contenders this weekend in the Nations Cup, Jim Richards, Gentleman Jim, he's always up there, and he, as they say, green floats to the top. Craig Baird filling in for Mark Noske, substituting in the pressing horse, Ferrari 360 Modena. And Peter Fitzgerald. Now, Fitzy's gone from one extreme to the other, sort of a race win, a DNF in the second race with a broken throttle linkage, and then from the back of the grid in the third race, a real storming drive to at least finish up in the points again.
Yes, that's right. Fitzy was one of the three Porsche drivers who won a race here at Canberra last year, Jim Richardson, Mark Williamson being the others. Fitzy started off the weekend in great style with a win. In race two, he was leading, and we're not quite sure of the circumstances, but he was leading. Jim Richards got past him on an absolutely brilliant knife-edge move, but within seconds of that, Peter pulled to the side of the road with a broken throttle cable. He was caught by the same situation as Paul Stokel, and he wasn't allowed to get his car back to the paddock before the start of the V8 race, but being only a throttle cable, they were able to repair it at the side of the track and have the car ready for race three. But of course that meant that Peter was starting off the back of the grid, and all he could do was race his best to get past the rest of the field on an extremely narrow circuit and pick up a couple of points. But another top performer who had a tough weekend.
As I say, Jim Richards did well, came through. He got two wins in the two races today on the Sunday. As always, just proves the fact that the Porsche really loves this Canberra street circuit.
Absolutely, and so does Jim. He's an ace whenever he goes to a street circuit. Of course, we can all remember his performances at the Gold Coast Indy Street Circuit over the years, his performances at the Clipsal 500 meeting in Adelaide. Wherever there's a street track, Jim seems to excel. He's an uncanny guy. He finished second to Fitzy yesterday. He got on top of him in race two, and then in race three, when he started from the front of the grid, he really wasn't challenged, although Craig Baird was pretty hot in his tail by the... by the eighth and last lap of race three today, but I am quite confident that if Jimmy had to put up another couple of laps, he would have found a way to keep Craig behind him.
Mm. Now, one of the interesting things I found this weekend was the return of the Vipers, the Dodge Vipers, Chrysler Vipers. They were back and they were booming around the Canberra circuit. Mark Williamson debuting his new little Lotus Elise, and of course Bob Thorne in that supercharged Jaguar. He was really having a go. He keeps saying he just needs a bit more horsepower.
Just needs a bit more horsepower. But I tell you what, it's a V8 supercharged Jaguar, and it sounded sensational today. They had a bit of a challenging weekend, but I think they've returned to Queensland tonight pretty happy with the performance of the Jaguar. Between its debut at Wakefield Park and this weekend in Canberra, they took something like 100 kilos out of it through the fitting of Kevlar panels. They found another 100 horsepower. And they did pretty well. Bob was unlucky not to finish one race yesterday when, in fact, the diff broke on the last lap and he pulled to the side of the road. But he'd been well and truly up in the running. His times were coming down. He was probably about 6 seconds off the front runners, which is not bad for a new car. Although he had a bit of an off today and lost his front spoiler at some stage, he managed to finish the race and... a promising to be for the Jaguar. I think that's going to be a pretty good car as its development progresses. The little Lotus, Mark Williamson, did extremely well in qualifying. I think he was 10th fastest in qualifying in a car that has only a 1.8 litre engine, but also only weighs 775 kilos, so around about 500 kilos lighter than anything else in the Nations Cup field. He didn't fare so well in the racing, unfortunately, but once again managed to finish the events. And that brings us to the story of the Chrysler Vipers, all of which ran pretty well right up until the last race when, unfortunately, Rusty French blew an engine in his Sky Sands car in a big way at the end of pit straight, dropping a fair bit of oil for everybody else.
I think that was one of those great smoke screens. People were wondering whether it was the remainder of the fog or the Viper dropping all its oil, and I think that the Viper dropping its oil won. So, Chris, the point scores that now stands for the Nations Cup, where do we look?
Well, Nations Cup, Jimmy has streaked away in the way Jim does, quietly but effectively. He has 380 points after this weekend, with Peter Fitzgerald on 290. Tony Quinn, who we haven't mentioned, but who's the Porsche GT3 driver, who had a very steady weekend, picked up a couple of third places, I think, or one third place, on 261 points. Dominic Bedinka, the Porsche TNT team driver and a former GCP champion, is in fourth position on 221. And then we get to the unfortunate Paul Stokel, 218 points, picked up just one this weekend. Mark Noski, of course, didn't add any points to his tally of 166 and slips back a couple of positions to sixth place. And the last one I want to mention is Craig Baird, who is right behind Noski on 142 points. He had no points at the beginning of this weekend and came into that car literally dead cold after a Friday night call to his home on the Gold Coast to say, will you come down and qualify this car first thing in the morning, before 9 a.m. even, I think it was. And he worked his way up through the field to score 2 second places today. Well, very good indeed.
Yeah, Craig Baird, he's one of those guys who's been around for a while with BMW team, and he's also made a previous appearance with the Prancing Horse team. But the step back in on short notice certainly did very, very well. Moving over to the performance category, again, some interesting results there over the weekend.
Well, interesting in that the Subaru WRXs have finally hit their straps. They've been in the GT production series for quite some years now. It wasn't until last year at Oran Park when Wayne Boatwright broke through for the first Subaru WRX win in the championship ever, albeit at the expense of the exclusion of Rich Shaw in his Mazda RX-7 for an illegal dip. But Brett Peters has also done it now. He won race 2 at Wakefield Park a month ago, and here at Canberra this weekend won both the races in the GT Performance Series of the Century Batteries Australian GT Production Car Championship.
Yeah, one of the people that a lot of people thought was going to do well in the races here in Canberra was Mark King, but of course he had problems very early on the piece, damaging his car. I can't remember if it was one of the practice sessions or similar, but damaged the front left of that car, ripped a tyre and strut out of it.
Another example of what I was saying is that the fancy runners ending up nowhere. Kingy was the winner of both races here last year. He was running second in the championship prior to this weekend, I think. Or no, third, I'm sorry, prior to this weekend. But a very strong performer. He's a suspension expert. He runs a company called King Springs, which works on the suspensions and for a lot of the V8 supercar teams and a lot of leading motorsport competitors in the country. And if there's anyone who knows how to set up a car to ride the bumps and curves of Canberra, it's Mark King. And I predicted that he would be the one to beat. And indeed, in qualifying, he was on pole. But pole position turned to the proverbial when he was trying just a little too hard, and he's either connected with a competitor or tagged something with his left front wheel, and it's broken an upright, and Mark was out of race one. Race two today, of course, that meant he started from the back of the grid, and he did a fine drive, but just wasn't going to get there. I think he got up to 14th out of a field of more than 30 cars.
Yeah, actually, I was talking to Brett Peters yesterday, and he was saying he was in behind Mark King when he did, basically said he just took the corner a little bit too close to the tyres, etc., and that was all she wrote. So,
that's the nature of the Canberra circuit, circuit collar. There's another couple of notable performances to mention, I think. Peter Floyd, who now drives a Holden Commodore HSV GTS 300i. Colin has been one of the Commodore runners, but it's fair to say he's not been one of the leading Commodore runners until now. But this weekend, he really showed what he has got in reserve. He finished third in yesterday's first leg and fourth in today's second leg. Went under the lap record along with three other Subaru drivers today, just showing that he really has got the talent. And of course, Peter is only a week back from racing in the Nürburgring, in the Nürburgring 24 hour, along with the Pro Car Chief Ross Palmer and Maher El Ghadri, the Ferrari driver in Nations Cup. So he must have learned something in 24 hours racing at the Nürburgring, because he came to Canberra this weekend, fired up, and did a brilliant job. That was great to see.
Yes, we were talking to him yesterday, and he was saying he was looking forward to the big, wide, open spaces of Queensland Raceway.
I reckon he will. That's where we'll see those Commodores really burn up. Queensland Raceway has a straight at the back, but it's something like 800 metres long, and 400-odd horsepower, I think, is going to be the way to go at Queensland. The other great performance this weekend was David Ratcliffe, who drives a Toyota Celica. Ratty is pretty well known in GTP circles. He drove a Camry for years and won his class championship, won his class in the Bathurst 3-hour. He switched to a Celica this year, and it's been it's been a difficult process for him so far, but it all came good in race two today, and Ratty managed to get up for a good win. He held off Nathan Thomas in the Honda Integra Type R. Nathan had taken pole and won yesterday's first leg. Class B, as we call it, Hippie Sports Touring, within the GT Performance Series, is really well and truly alive. There's a very strong competition there between a number of Honda drivers, a couple of Celica drivers, a couple of BMW drivers, the two Works Volkswagens. It's absolutely full of competition wherever you look, right through the GT field.
Actually, I think that Ratty might have had a little bit of help. I noticed there was a certain gentleman who's better known for running around in a little Corolla on dirt rally roads, having a bit of a chat to him, so he might have been passing on a few helpful hints about how to make a Celica go faster, since our own Neil Bates had last used a Celica to win the Australian Rally Championship. So, you never know, there might have been a few hints being passed around there.
There might well have been, but all in all, it was a great weekend. Wayne Boatwright won the, or came second in both races to Brett Peters, so that's Subaru's 1 and 2, and I hope there's some people at Subaru taking notice of that, and not considering that all the Subaru action occurs only in the Australian Rally Championship. Bodie won the got the lap record today too, 158.02. That was very good, but there were three Subarus. I think also Brett Peters got under it, and as I say, Peter Floyd and I think Gary Dean from memory. So, great. In closing, Colin, there's one thing I wanted to say again about Nations Cup, and we were just touched very briefly on the Trials of the Vipers. Darcy Russell was the star performer today. He went very well with his Viper. He's got a new red paint job, and that might have had something to do with the red car steps to go faster. Darcy was stoked because he came third in race three today and I think fourth in race two earlier in the day. But he got under the lap record as well. There were Paul Stokel, Jim Richards and Darcy Russell and the Viper all got under the Nations Cup lap record today. So anybody out there who's a Viper fan can rest assured that now the Vipers are back in the championship and they are really on the money with the Porsches and the Ferrari and the Lamborghini.
Yeah, that's why I'm mentioning Darcy, that big red Viper. I've noticed I've been watching, I've typically picked a couple of different places to watch around the track, and one of them is the chicane, little chicane that is the Canberra chicane, which is from jumping from the outside of the circuit to the inside around the back of the Albert Hall here. And watching Darcy the first couple of days attacking that corner, and it was a bit tentative. This morning when he was attacking that corner, he was attacking the corner and obviously feeling much more confident in the Viper, and probably he's got used to it. I suppose if you're driving a Viper, a big car like that, heavy on the Canberra street circuit, he'd be worried if something went wrong, but watching today he was really attacking it. And obviously the results have shown, third today, and good on him, and as you say, the Viper's back, another good one to watch when they get up to Queensland Raceway.
Absolutely, yeah. Can you imagine 10 cylinders and 8 litres and Lord knows how much horsepower. And now very slippery bodywork, great Brembo brakes and a 6-quid Hollinger sequential box on those wide open spaces at Queensland Raceway. Queensland Raceway, the second of the independent Pro Car Series rounds, is on the 20th and 21st of July, and instead of being in the company of the V8 Supercars, the Pro Car Series, the Nations Cup, the GT Performance and GT Production divisions of the Australian GT Production Car Championship, the V8 Brutes and the Toyo Mitsubishi Mirage Series are all going to be on the bill there, and I think that it's going to be another sensational meeting.
If it's anything like Wakefield Park a few weeks ago, I'm sure it will be. All right, Chris Nixon from the GDP Series, thanks very much for joining us, and we'll no doubt catch up with you at that next round.
Look forward to talking to you, Colin.
Thank you.
And of course Colin Ford and the team out there at the Albert Hall, where it was the media centre for the all the racing today. I had an opportunity earlier in the day to catch up with the Class A winner of the GT Performance category, which was Brett Peters, and today it was a Subaru front row, Peters and Boatwright, and I asked Brett if it was any easier getting off the line with a Subaru beside him rather than Mark King's Evo 5.
Pretty much the same thing happened to Wayne, it happened to me yesterday, even though we both got good starts. You know, if you're on pole, you're on the inside and you've only got to stand your ground and you're right.
It has been an exciting meeting for all the Pro Car Series this weekend, and you're looking forward to a standalone meeting up at Queensland Raceway next time out.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly for our cars, the Subaru WRXs, that we had to do well at Wakefield and here at Canberra, because we're not going to get it our own way in Queensland, so we'll be working hard over the next few weeks to try and get some speed up there.
the good thing about this weekend is it's given you the points lead in the championship going up there, and obviously where the Commodores are going to be a bit more suited to the track.
Oh, absolutely, and that's what we're aware of. We really had to make this weekend pay. Maybe didn't quite expect to come away with two wins, but really happy with that. And yeah, we've just got to keep scoring points now.
Well, congratulations, and we wish all the best up in Queensland.
Thanks very much.
Of course, the GMC 400 plays host to a number of other support categories, which sometimes the racing is of Wayne Boat Race. Yes, and sometimes those categories are more exciting than the main show. This weekend, Graham Alexander put on a fantastic show. He followed Wayne Boat Race in race number two, and I asked him, how did he shoehorn that car, that Mitsubishi, past the Commodore of Floyd? Right.
Four-wheel drive just off the mark pretty well. Good. So we got off the mark better than him at the start, and we just kicked him out.
Now, no tips off to get the snow chains off?
No, we didn't need that. Took a bit to get the temperature into the tyres today because it was pretty cold, but everything was a bit slippery for the first couple of laps.
I had you on the last race last night and then the first race this morning. Obviously, you didn't want to have too many problems in that race last night.
No, that's for sure. Yeah, we had a pretty trouble-free run yesterday, and we didn't have anything to do with the car, so it was good.
Well, congratulations on third place today, and good luck to Queensland Raceway in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks very much.
Next to Mark Noske, Grant Kenny took one of the bigger hits on race day weekend. Kenny found out that hitting the wall in motorsport is not quite as easy to overcome as in Ironman.
Wasn't the best way to finish the race, but you know, I guess some would say that's motor racing. I find it a little bit frustrating, but yeah, it was interesting because I actually love the circuit. I find it, you know, it's really a lot of fun to drive, and I've, you know, driven it now in the wet and the dry, and I enjoy both. And I've been having a really good race, and then, you know, I just got the tap from behind that speared me into the wall, but you know, there you go.
Up into seventh place as well, so getting some good results on the track here.
Yeah, well, I really messed up in qualifying and qualified 19th, and we've done no time in this car. So for me, you know, it was disappointing, but it was my own fault. So yesterday, you know, from 19th I got up to 7th and then made a mistake and dropped 4 places. Finished 11th, so I started 11th today, and yeah, I was in 7th, and I think I had a reasonable chance of getting past the Commodore in front of me in the next sort of lap or so, but that was not to be.
It's tough in a timed race. You can't sort of just think as good if it was just, all right, you're going to run this many laps, because you don't know whether to conserve or whether to keep charging.
Yeah, well, I think really the only way to go is to keep charging, but don't take any unnecessary risks, because obviously the result of that is what happened to me. You know, you end up, or somebody ends up in the wall and you don't finish. So that, I guess, is pretty disappointing, and it's something that, you know, you need to sort of bear in mind and go as hard as you can, keeping it together.
And of course, you fellas in the GT Performance car have shown the show ponies up down the road there that you can pass on this track.
Yeah, well, our cars, for the most part, are a little bit narrower, and you can pass on this track, but you know, there are limited passing opportunities here, but if you're patient and you know you know where your opportunities are, and you sort of plan to capitalise on that once every lap or so, then yeah, you can get around. But I think it's also fair to say that you know, the V8s are not only a lot wider, but they're also a lot more consistent and competitive. The depth is very competitive, so you know, where there's only a few hundredths and tenths of a second between all those competitors, it's very hard to you know, basically make a move that would change the lap times by a second or more.
Mm. Well, you get to stay in your home venue where the T-shirt won't be as cold to be wearing.
Yeah, well, actually, the sun, as it's breaking its way through the fog, is doing a good job, and it's quite warm now. But hey, the great thing about the cold temperature in Canberra is you can go skiing soon. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, thanks very much, and bad luck today.
Thank you.
So at the end of the day, Brett Peters leaves Canberra with a sensational lead in the GT Performance category. In Class B, the honours were split between David Radcliffe and Nathan Thomas. Radcliffe Solika edging out Thomas today in race number two.
Yes, well, Nathan was having a bit of a tussle with the other Nathan in the Mitsubishi, so while they were doing that, I just put the head down. I thought this was the one and only chance to get in front and go.
The great thing about the Century Battery Series is just the diverse range of cars, and having the two classes in together also does make for some interesting battles, because at the end of the day, you finish in front of a Subaru or an Evo and you say, I still have got some driving in me.
Yeah, no, our class is really good. I mean, today we've got, a Mitsubishi up there, a Toyota up there, the Volkswagens are up there, the Hondas are up there. There's nothing between the power of them all. It's just really, really close. So it's a good class, actually. Enjoy it. We've had a little bit of trouble. The first race meeting in Adelaide wasn't too bad. I mean, computer problems in Wakefield, and the plug kept falling out of the computer, would you believe? So, and then we did a clutch of last race. So this meeting, we've got it all together, got a computer working properly. So hopefully it keeps going like that the rest of the season.
You started from a fair way back, though, qualifying, you had problems?
We made a mistake on tyre choice, so we were back on 8, yeah, so we rectified that and fought our way back up.
Thomas, though, and of course, Colin, that was a very interesting Class B result. Thomas taking the points overall because he was able to win in heat number 1 and have a second in heat number 2, and as we heard, Radcliffe not having such a good run in heat number 1.
Yeah, the Nations Cup is always a great competition there. As it was earlier today, I was actually able to catch up with Craig Baird, the man who was the super sub who filled in for Mark Noski during this weekend's racing. As we say, he arrived cold after Mark Noski had injured himself in rolling the Mustang. He raced both the Mustang and the Ferrari 360 Modena. As it was in the Nations Cup was where he performed best. He finished sixth in the first race and then a pair of seconds. And as I say, we were able to catch up with Mark, Craig Baird a little bit earlier on, and here's what he had to say. And second overall for the weekend, with a pair of seconds in races 2 and 3, Craig Baird in the Prancing Horse Ferrari. Craig, definitely a good run from stepping in at the last minute.
Yeah, it was. Obviously, the car's well suited around here, and I've driven it before, so that was quite an advantage. But, unfortunate for Mark to have broken his arm. And but I tell you what, when I got the call Friday late afternoon, I jumped on the plane pretty quick, too.
Now, the conditions this morning very, very cold. How were they out on the track?
No, it was fine. You know, the whole track was dry, and that's what I was dreading because I hadn't really done a lot of miles in different conditions in the car, so I was hoping that it wasn't going to rain halfway through the race or something, but no, it was fine. Everything, the team did a fantastic job, and just good for the Budweiser, considering Mark wasn't in the car, to still get a podium finish.
Now, in the third race, near the end there, you were really putting the pressure on Jim Richards.
Yeah, I thought about having a bit of a lunge here and there, but it's a reasonably expensive car, and Jimmy's is an expensive car, and I don't own either of them, so I thought better of it, but if there was an opportunity, I would have, but Jimmy's pretty clever, so especially around a track like this, there's not a lot of passing opportunity, but I was happy with the second.
In terms of Jim's car near the tail end of that race, was it giving any indication there was any problems with, say, like, rear tyre something going away, or was it still appearing to hold fairly well?
He may have been on softer rubber than us, because in the first 2-3 laps I thought I was sort of working pretty hard to stay with him, and then the gaps stayed the same, and then it started to come down, so it was probably just a different tyre compound, and we run a Pirelli tyre, and it was very good at the end of the race.
In terms of the circuit now, had a bit of a run around it during the races and practice, have you picked out a particular area of the track that you like the best?
Not really. A racetrack is one of these places you've got to really be able to like everything about it. If you take a place and say, well, I really like this part of the track, you go well there, and the part that you don't like, psychologically, you're going to be, your mind's not working properly. So you just got to get the whole thing and piece it together and like the whole lot.
Well, Craig, well done on a quick step-in substitution, and hope you might see you around some of the future rounds.
All right.
Yeah, Craig Baird there. And of course, the news on Mark Noski's arm is it's a, what they describe as a radial fracture of the forearm. Apparently, we'll be going back down to Melbourne. The specialists are going to look at it Monday or Tuesday. Very likely one of those situations where surgery, pins and plating, and probably a fairly long-term recovery. Hopefully Mark will be back on track in the near future.
Yes, that's very sad to hear that he had an injury like that. He's obviously very well regarded, as we've seen in all of our discussions and interviews with the other drivers, so they're all wishing him the very best in getting back into that car as soon as possible.
Yep. One of the other people, of course, the man who won the weekend overall and improved his championship for the Nations Cup was Jim Richards, and I was able to catch up with Jim a little bit later on this afternoon. The race wins in race 2 and race 3 in the GT Nations Cup here at Canberra. Jim Richards, you've well and truly done yourself well for the championship.
Yes, well, we're fortunate because we you could say we profited from other people's misfortune, but I mean, our car was quick enough to win anyway. We managed a couple of wins, and the Lamborghini and Peter Fitz had a DNF in one race. So, yeah, I mean, it's done the chances. No harm, that's for sure.
Canberra is a circuit that favoured the Porsches last year, so you must have come here thinking that you're in with, at least with a chance.
Oh, no, I thought like a street circuit really is a bit of a leveller. Because I mean, if you can drive the car really hard and fire it around and it's good and reliable, then you can usually get a reasonable result. So the Porsches were always going to go good here, but also the Ferraris and the Lambos were going good also. So just a matter of who got in front of the start.
We noticed near the end of the final race today that Craig Baird in that Prancing Horse Ferrari was really pushing hard.
Yeah, well, I had a little bit of a gap, and then of course I was slowed by the lapping the Honda, and Craig caught right up onto me. And then of course once he's on you, then you've got to drive defensively, which slows your lap time down and allows him to sort of stay with you.
Of course, a bit of chaos going out there today with the Viper dropping its oil everywhere. Was that any problem for you?
No, not really. We knew it was there. We just sort of, you know, went around it.
Well, Jim, thanks very much. Look forward to seeing you go Queensland, right?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jim Richards there, as you can tell, that was just about the time when the V8s were coming onto the track.
Yes, that very sweet sound in the background.
Now, Peter, of course, a few stories going on today in relation to this event. We've heard that the crowd figures for the event this year, 101,000 people over the 3 days.
Yes, I'm sure there's going to be a great deal of debate about that. Last year, with the higher crowd figure, there was a lot of debate about that one as well, and it was quite obvious this year that the crowd numbers were a bit down. It could have been a bit deceiving because the area where the merchandising area was set up this year on the museum side of the little peninsula, it was a much more active area in terms of corporate and grandstands, and it was an active place for people to gather. But it was visibly down on last year, and the relativity, well, that remains to be seen. Of course, the joke that was going around here on Friday was everyone was expecting to see the press release with the crowd figures for Friday, Saturday and Sunday already pre-visioned. A lot of people were a little bit cynical about some of those statistics. Quite interesting. We sat in the grandstand. We paid the price and bought our tickets well in advance. Of course, we do get an excellent position up in the grandstand near the National Library, view of the big screen. And we were packed in like sardines. I have not been packed in that close since I went to a NASCAR race. And the NASCAR race, it was all right because the crowd stood nearly the whole race. But here, trying to sit down in these plastic chairs, which I think are primary school chairs, that's how tight they are on adults, that was quite uncomfortable, and that was disappointing. Also disappointing was, I don't think they've learned their lessons about the public address system. At the beginning of the last race, the PA died, and the punter next to me, he was quite disgusted. There's some of these little things that they still need to get right for fans to start returning in their numbers. The novelty's now worn off. We keep putting on great entertainment in terms of the racing. You can't question the quality of the racing out there throughout all of the categories. But in terms of an event, we still need to pull things out to get all the punters in there. And, okay, the weather wasn't particularly helpful this year, but that's part of running the race this time of the year. I think this will be the normal weather pattern rather than anything abnormal.
Yeah, I think one of the comments that has been said to me by a number of people is the fact that the increase in ticket costs was one of the disincentives for people to attend this year. Whereas if we look at, for example, the Eclipse 500 in Adelaide, they have frozen the ticket prices, basically kept the same ticket prices. Each year they say, well, okay, we're going to free them for you. If you get your tickets before such and such a date, you pay the same sort of money. I think, okay, they obviously had greater costs this year with the track works that had to be done, but the name of the game was that the punter shouldn't be expected to pay for it. If they'd kept ticket prices, maybe made a moderate increase, more punters would have turned up, so it would have been a matter of more people, more money that way, rather than more money from less people.
Yes, I think we have to look at some of the relativities. If you went to an Eastern Creek or an Oran Park, looking at $50 per adult for the Sunday is not unreasonable. Well, it's not unusual. Whether it's reasonable or not is really up to the debate, and it really depends on the quality of the support card. In some of those races, they didn't have the quality in the support card, so people were a little bit disappointed. So $50 seems to be the benchmark, if you like it or not. And I know a lot of people in the workplace that I work in, they were going, went last year, ticket prices were up $50. I'm not a motorsport fan as such. I know $50 is going to stay in my pocket. So if they're going to make it that mass appeal to try to really get the big crowd numbers, I think they're going to have to recalibrate some of their admission prices. Also, the beef that I had was they package it and promote it as a three-day ticket. And on the Friday, the big screen TVs, the public address, some of these other little things aren't in place and really operating up to full speed. I think that's something that they really have to work on.
Now, of course, we've got Jeff here, our work experience man, having his first experience of the media side of things. Normally, you've worked with Craig on Sunday Morning Sport. What's your impression of this sort of whole activity that goes on with a big event like the GMC 400?
Well, I think it's a great setup. And firstly, just on the mentioning of the stands, and that, Pete, you should have made your way down to Turn 12, the chicane stands, the grandstands over there. They were only half full, unfortunately, and right along that back straight on Flynn Avenue, or Flynn Drive, I think it is, they had some new stands in there just for standing room, and it elevated you a little bit, and that was one of the gripes I had as a spectator last year, that, you know, you couldn't, there were only limited viewing opportunities, whereas this year, to the credit of the organisers, they have provided a few more opportunities where you can be at a raised level, and have a better opportunity to see over these huge concrete barriers that that surround the entire circuit. As for the media centre, as for this entire media experience, it's been fantastic, and I'm looking forward to an even greater involvement, hopefully next year.
Well, we'll have to see what we can do. Maybe we'll bolt you in somewhere and as part of the crew for sure. Anyhow, we'll throw it back to Craig in his chair, because no doubt we've got some other news there, international news and other news. Oh, hang on, Peter's got one more thing to go with. And what's that, Peter?
Well, one of the interesting things coming up this weekend, of course, it's a weekend that's chock-a-block full of motorsport, with NASCAR, IRL, and a lot of other things that Craig's been talking about. And one of those is Formula One coming from Canada, that place that is sort of dear to my heart. And there's a bit of fuss there. We know that the French Canadians are very proud of their Canadian heritage, and that they get very sensitive about anything that tries to undermine the Canadian language. And they're all getting very upset about Jacques Villeneuve's new nightclub that he has opened in Montreal. And the problem about it, and this is what Villeneuve said, is to tell the truth, to see the people actually get offended by the whole thing makes him laugh, because what he's done is he's used his the strict English translation of his name to name the nightclub, and so it's Newtown. I don't ask me to explain the translation between Villeneuve and Newtown, but it is that literal translation. So in Montreal, people are getting really upset, and in Quebec, they actually have language police. They go and they will fine you if your sign does not meet certain criteria. So his sign on the nightclub is in small letters, and it's a trademark as such, so trying to get around all of the local laws. But it's one of those sort of peculiarities of Quebec, Montreal, and it really is quite a funny thing to see in the lead-up to the Canadian Grand Prix tonight.
I'm sure that Jacques has better things to do this time than worry about the language police.
Well, he spent most of his life living in Europe, and when he's living in Switzerland in particular, where he did most of his growing up, everyone there speaks four or five languages, so for anyone to be particularly sensitive about one of them, he finds quite remarkable.
Ralph Schumacher has won the 2000 Canadian Formula One Grand Prix, a pit stop strategy which saw him have four laps, breaking the lap record on each occasion after his brother Michael had pitted for tyres and fuel, was the difference between the two Schumacher brothers. We go now to the driver debrief.
Michael Schumacher and Mika Hakkinen. Ralph, many, many congratulations. A superb second win. A great 46-lap duel with your brother. Fastest lap. Is this the most fun you've ever had with your clothes on?
Well, I mean, it was a great racing today. The whole time the two of us were together, was always waiting for him to do a mistake. Obviously, he didn't. So I knew that. I mean, I tried it a couple of times at the end of a straight, but I knew that it was difficult. So I waited for the pit strategy, which I thought that we were going longer anyway, and it worked out that way.
We saw you pull out the slipstream on that final straight a couple of times and get almost along. Did you approach it differently because you were trying to overtake your brother?
No, not really. You know, the thing is, I had the upper hand the whole stint, basically. I mean, I was following him quite easy. My car was just brilliant today. And I didn't want to risk too much. I knew that, that we were very long, you know, we had a lot of fuel on board. I knew that, so I thought, you know, you better wait till he pits and then you try to pull the gap out instead of, you know, trying it harder, maybe do a mistake and lose it, and that's what I tried.
As you say, your car was brilliant today. When you were in the post-qualifying conference, you weren't very sure it would be good in race conditions. What did you do to it?
Well, we changed quite a few things overnight, but the tyre today worked, again, brilliant. And I think looking at the Bridgestone tyres, they looked a bit worse than ours at the end of the race, and then especially looking at Michael's car, which was very nervous. I knew it was difficult for him to go to pace.
Well, thank you. Michael, I suppose you have to lose to someone. You might as well lose to your brother.
Yeah, that's certainly the best to lose to. I mean, I guess our mum and dad will be very proud of us. First time a brother pair being first and second on the podium, and I'm obviously delighted. I took 6 important points, he got his second win in his career, so a happy family day, I'd say.
And when he was following you for those 40 laps, did you trust him all the time not to make any mistakes, or do you think back to perhaps instance you've had at your kart track at home?
No, the point is that I know he's experienced enough not to do mistakes, and he obviously was close to an overtaking, but when you're inside, basically you have to brake a little bit earlier to make the corner, and I was braking very late to try the maximum, and as he said, he knew he was going to go longer, so I understand that he didn't take the maximum risk for any of us, and it worked out for him.
Now, after the stop, you seemed a little bit slow. Was that just taking it easy, or did you have a minor problem?
I mean, initially I pushed obviously very hard in order to maybe make up the gap and beat him, so when he comes after his pit stop, come in front of him. But it's normal that this doesn't work, because you are normally always faster by your end of the stint than whenever you put fresh tyres on the fuel on board. But you have to try. I mean, you never know what traffic does, or maybe a little mistake. So I pushed in this moment very hard. Once I saw him coming up in front of me and putting quite a margin towards me, there was only one strategy: drive safely home the race and take the 6 points.
Michael, thank you. Mickey, it must just be a tremendous relief to finally make the podium this year.
One sense, yes. It has been a really disastrous start of the season, so it's a nice to be in podium, and particularly starting 8th position, because this was our target, really. The finishing the podium was the most important.
You were stuck in what seemed like a train of traffic, but once you got free, you're quite a bit quicker. How come you couldn't overtake them?
Simply leaving from the hairpin before the back straight, you know, looks like the cars were in front of me. They were able to accelerate out that corner a little bit quicker, so I never didn't get the opportunity to get the slipstream on a straight line and overtake them in the straight. So It was just impossible. It was just better to wait and see what happens, and the fuel stop, you know, when they went in the fuel stop once, and that was obviously gave me a lot of help, and then they definitely had an incident. I think Raikkonen and Sonda had an incident, and the Raikkonen had a damage in his diffuser, so his car wasn't handling so well anymore, so it gave me a great opportunity to overtake them.
Hamilton. Ralph, we now go to what is really, I suppose, your home circuit at the Nürburgring. You must be looking forward to that with great vigour now.
Well, I mean, it will be obviously great, especially in Nürburgring in Germany, when we could repeat it. I think the person next to me wouldn't like to hear that very much, but I mean, we both try our best. You know, whoever is going to be in front of us, I think it's great for the German crowd anyway, but I think we're both looking forward to come home and to compete again in front of home crowd.
Also in North America, some news coming out of the Kart FedEx Championship. And it won't be official for a few weeks, but ESPN.com had reported that the kart teams have finally decided to a new engine format. It will be similar to the IRLs, and it won't be won't come into effect until the year 2004. But what they're doing is they're dropping the turbocharger. They're going back to the sort of more normally aspirated, and it really brings them a little bit closer to what the IRL use, because that's been the big sticking point for a lot of their more friendly discussions over the last 18 months. trying to get the kart teams and cars back into the Indy 500, they couldn't come to terms over engines. Tony George and the IRL people sticking to their guns and sticking to their contracts for the IRL engines, so it's a principle they wouldn't budge on, and it looks like kart are now willing to budge. So kart have had a pretty miserable year in terms of some of their events not running, and this could be another chink in their armour that they're softening on the stand for engines as well.
Well, I'd say that that's obviously going to be something that's going to develop over the coming weeks. Anyhow, we'll now go back to Craig Revell, back in the station.
Thanks very much, fellas. Still plenty to come on Inside Motorsport tonight as we are still trying to catch up with Rob Oberg up there at the Konica Winter Nationals.
Wake up and be in touch. Hear it first on Triple S with the BBC Sports Roundup. Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday at 10 to 8 and Saturday from 6:20 a.m. BBC Sports Roundup, keeping you in touch with the sports of the world on Canberra's only sports and racing station, Triple S FM.
Give to the Salvation Army Red Shield Appeal the 26th and 27th of May. Call 133230 with your donation. Thank God for the Salvers.
Inside Motorsport on Triple S FM.
Colin McRae has won his second rally in...
Whoever rates the fifth for these races, you know, really should be getting a race from the American Le Mans Series organisation. Tom Christensen going for 3 Sebring victories in...
Dora Dapinski, Elio Castro Neves leads the final 51 laps and wins the 85th Indianapolis 500 mile race.
Don't be fooled by the competition. If it's motorsport, it's on Triple S FM.
Colin McRae has put Britain back in the hunt for the World Rally Championship when he knocks up his second win in a row. Greg Strange from the BBC has this report.
Colin McRae has won his second rally in 2 weeks. Richard Burns was only 4 seconds quicker than the Scot on the final stage, but it didn't matter. McRae, the winner by 16.4 seconds, always allowing for the drive back to the official finishing ramp here in Limassol. Carlos Sainz came in third, and what this all means is that the Brits are back in the hunt for the Drivers' Championship. Tommy Mäkinen still leads with 27 points. Heinz moves up to 26 in second. McRae is now third on 20 points, and Burns has 15, and he's fourth. Ford overtake Mitsubishi in the manufacturer's title race. They lead 50 to 46, and the pace doesn't slacken. On Friday week, Burns, McRae and all the rest will be in Greece for round 7 of the championship, the Acropolis Rally.
Co-driver for Colin McRae, Nicky Grist, said it was a great win for the team.
Obviously, absolutely delighted. I mean, tremendous. The focus was good. Our Pirelli tyres worked very, very well, and I think there's nothing more to be said.
Well, there is a little bit more to be said. There's a rally coming up in Greece in just under 2 weeks' time, and that's the next stage, isn't it?
I think so. It certainly is an event where we can basically pull off a victory there as well, as well as Kenya. I think that there's every possibility that a championship's looking very good at the end of the year. That's what we're working against.
Thank you.
It's just a shame that we've not been able to pick up any points before these events, but with 2 victories it makes a big difference.
Yes, it does. 2.5 weeks ago this was inconceivable, isn't it?
Absolutely. But always possible.
Would it be true to say that Colin, who's always an outstanding driver, we know, but has become a more mature tactical driver over the last 12 months? Perhaps even that episode in Corsica may have done something to do with that.
No, I think Colin's sort of come on a lot probably in the last 2, probably even 3 years. He's really sort of showed his experience, and certainly here he drove an excellent rally.
He seems to know now when to go for the kill, if that's not being too nasty in the sport, which is still remarkably gentlemanly in the old sense.
It is, very much like that. Of course, it'll always be gentlemanly because there's no contact. You know, we're racing the clock, not each other, directly. So I think that you know, as the years go by, we're going to get stronger and stronger, and we're going to be the team to beat.
So there's no question of you retiring at the end of this year, as those rumours suggested a few weeks ago.
No, I don't know where that came from. No, I'm certainly in it for the next 2 years, and we can just build on it from there.
I don't want to sort of take any of the gloss off your victory. It's been outstanding, but spare him a thought for a moment for Richard Burns, because this is 2 weeks running, he's finished second, and he's an outstanding talent, and it does seem to be sometimes that he plays bridesmaid to Colin when he's in this sort of form.
You know, there's only one simple answer. He's doing well, but he has to do better. I mean, you've just got to drive faster, and that's what it takes to win rallies.
Colin McRae, who won by 16.4 seconds, was happy with the result.
Yeah, great. Brilliant. Great result. You've done back-to-back victories before, but you really needed these two, didn't you? Argentina 2 weeks ago in this one.
Yeah, it was getting a fairly crucial point in the championship, and it's going to make a big difference now.
Now, of course, your championship hopes, you're right back on course, aren't you? I know you don't like to think about the championship, you like to take each rally as it comes, but that's what you tell us.
I mean, we can start thinking about it now. We're 7 points behind Tommy, 6 behind Carlos. Another good run in Acropolis, then it's going to be right there.
You laid the foundations for this victory last night when you managed to make sure that by coming in second last night that Richard Burns would be first on the road today.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether it was going to make a great big difference as far as position in the road was concerned, but it certainly wound Richard up a bit, so yeah, I did the job on that side of it.
And this morning you put the hammer down just when it was needed.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I thought it was going to be a bit tighter today. 22 seconds was quite a gap, considering what it was like when we started off this morning, so I'm delighted.
Well, you're third in the championship, but you were third before, but you now have 20 points. Tommy Mackin's on 27 and Carlos on 26. Game on?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to Acropolis, try and do the same again or get on the podium. And yeah, it's going to be very close after that.
Formula Holden is always an interesting one, and a young gun, or a young lion, should I say, who has really stretched the field is Rick Kelly.
Yeah, thanks to Tim. I've done a great job. This has been outstanding. I think Simon's data helped me from last year a bit. The team got the car sorted out, and yeah, we're up the front the whole way, and really happy with that.
What do you think of the Canberra street circuit as compared to, say, Adelaide, which you raced on earlier in the year?
They're both very dangerous circuits, with the walls being right on the edge of the track, but I think Canberra here seems to be a lot more dangerous with a few really quick straights with the walls really close, and the bumps are still an issue here at Canberra.
You are enjoying this first season in the Formula Holden?
Yeah, it's been great. It's great to be with such a good team, and a team that knows as much as Barana do, so it's been great so far, yeah.
And what about ultimate goals? Where do you want to see yourself progressing to?
However I can get it at the moment. Hopefully a full-time touring car driver in Australia, or my ultimate aim would be still to head overseas, but in these days in Australia, it becomes very hard to get over there.
Yeah, the Australian dollar doesn't buy a wheel now, does it?
No, certainly doesn't.
All right, well, congratulations. It's great. Great showing today, and all the best for the rest of the season.
All right, thanks a lot.
Christian Murchison couldn't repeat his form of last year, but he settled for 2 second places out of the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we sort of came here not really knowing what to expect. We've sort of been having trouble developing our cars throughout the year, and it's only now that we're sort of starting to get on top of it. And yeah, so 2 seconds wasn't a bad result.
The championship, though, is it still an option?
Well, at this stage, I really don't think so. I mean, Rick's going to have to have some pretty bad rounds, or, you know, quite a few DNFs for me to be able to catch up to him. He's quite a way in front at the moment, so I'll just have to wait and see how the championship turns out.
And what about future plans for next season? What have you been looking at?
We've sort of been looking towards Europe and America, and trying to get into either Indy Lights or IRL or Formula 2000. That's sort of really where we've sort of been trying to go. I mean, throughout the end of last year and beginning of this year, I did do the Formula 3000 tests, which went very well, but due to a lack of funding, we weren't able to get in there. So we're sort of still trying to go down that road, and we'll keep trying.
All else fails, you still have got a tin top ride for the long distance races.
Well, I'm not too sure at the moment what's happening with that, but we're sort of still trying to organise and finalise details.
All right then, well, we wish you all the best for the upcoming rounds of the Formula Holden Championship, and congratulations, second place today.
Thanks very much.
Canberra driver Dale Breed managed to spin and then come back after a safety car to pick up third position.
You know, we were making good progress in the first part of the race, and I thought I probably could have gotten to third anyway, we were fast enough to, but I think the pace car Actually, funnily enough, I think the pace car came out because I've spun and Alan's car was off the side, so I thought they'd take the opportunity. So it's probably a blessing in disguise, to be honest.
Now, for yourself, this is only a cameo appearance in the Formula Holdings. Your moves back into the Connector Car for Lexus?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is just a one-off drive. Chris rang me during the week and offered me the drive. It's a bit hard to resist a drive in your hometown, and it's important to be seen and be part of the action. So, you know, we're now 100% focused back on the touring car and the rest of the Konica series, and then sort of gearing up towards the endurance races and that type of thing as well.
Another local who looked to have third place sewn up before a deflating tyre stopped his progress was Terry Clearahan.
Well, we didn't really. Over the weekend, we actually run equal third. But again, of course, with the A and the B, the Gold Star and Silver Star, we ended up with the laurels in the Silver Star.
It was a pretty tough race for you. You had a couple of incidents throughout the race, and of course, a deflating tyre to go on with it.
Well, it was a good start. We're up to third in the first corner, which we're very happy with, or I was very happy with. And unfortunately, in the first lap, young Alan Gurr tried to overtake me and ended up into the wall, which gave me a bit of a break, and we were pretty well home and hosed there, looking pretty well for third spot. But the safety car came out when the other local, Dale Breed, spun in one of the corners and couldn't restart. And we basically, after the restart, of course, of the safety car, Peter caught up, and into that famous corner down at Flynn Drive, we basically did a repeat of yesterday. Fortunately enough, we both came out of it, both spinning, fire smoke, but unfortunately losing a spot.
And well, anyway, at the end of the day, the sponsors here would have been happy from the coverage you've been giving them.
Well, yes, actually they're very happy. Actually, I've had I've been approached by a local business to come and talk to them during the week, so things are looking up, so it looks like we might get the call there.
All right, well, good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you.
But just to let people know, as of the moment, Willowbank Raceway over there, up there for the Winter Nationals, I was just going through the results. Searle is through in Top Door Slammer, that's the only one I actually had a chance to get to. Wayne, Phillips, Newby, Shackleton and Brewer are all through round number three. In Pro Stock, which we see Bruce Leake already through round three, Ridge Ray Toledo and Andrew Philopoulos is also through round three with wins so far tonight at Willowbank Raceway. I'm sorry we haven't had a chance to get a hold of Rob Oberg. We had every intention of getting him on the show tonight, but well, that's the way the cookie crumbles. This has been Inside Motorsport. We hope you've enjoyed all the motorsport action we've been able to bring to you on Triple SFM right throughout the last 3 days. And don't forget, next Sunday morning, on Sunday Morning Sport, the Motorstop doesn't stop there when we take our delayed coverage of the Texas round of the Indianapolis Racing League, the Northern Lights Series, from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. Until next week, on behalf of the team out there at Albert Hall in Canberra, of Colin Ford, Peter Norton, thanks to Chris Nixon, Brenton Ramsey and all the team that have helped us out right throughout the weekend, including Sunday Morning Sports, Jeffrey Adams and of course Kevin Wolf back there. It seems so long ago now on Friday morning when we started our GMC 400 coverage here on Triple SFM. On behalf of the Inside Motorsport team and everyone here, I hope you have enjoyed your weekend, and we look forward to seeing you, if you're visiting Canberra, home safe and back here for next year's event. And until then, bye for now.
You know, a car works very well around street courses, and it's proven that in the past, and today is no exception.
I think it's been a while since there have been 1-2 back in the Sierra days, so yeah, I mean, we're very pleased, but you know, we still got to do it all again tomorrow, and it can change, and you can go from first or second to 15th tomorrow, so we just got to make sure we can put a good lap in the top 15 shootout.
The car was pretty good around here, so with the changes that they've done with the resurfacing, it's quite a bit quicker under the bridge. It's quite a bit safer than it was last year, because I think we spent most of the time in the air last year going under the bridge. But it's a great improvement.
You know, if you rated it as a 7 last year, it's an 8 or 8.5 now. And, you know, as we do more and more work, it'll get better over the years. You got me to find my way into your heart from under your skin. Fast as you can, baby, scratch me, I'll see yourself fast as you can. The
DJR guys have done an exceptional job with their cars here this weekend. They seem to have got the car working very well. But when you come back in the pack, you know, that's where the times are close. It's very competitive, and you've just got to put one lap in. You know, my first lap was only probably good enough for 15th or 16th, and then, you know, the second lap, you bang it in the top five. So it's a pressure cooker.
Either drifted a bit wide or we had a deflated tyre, I'm not quite sure, but it just went wide in turn one and went into the wall. It wasn't very hard. Once I hit the wall, the tyre was dead flat, and it was just a struggle trying to get it back, and finally the tyre sort of half came off the rim, so I couldn't get it all the way home. So it's not, damage is pretty minimal, just replacing a suspension arm, and that's about it. And you give me some more
of your delusions. It's been a long time since someone can go up. I mean, you can't really go up and say, g'day Mr. Holden, or g'day Mr. Ford, or g'day Mr. Mobile, but you can certainly come up and say, g'day Big Kev. And I love the fans, I love talking to them, and you know, we exchange a little bit of information on the car, and it's a real good team out here, and the fans become, they become part of the big racing family.
The wall was really my problem, and it was the Holden wall, so that's an even bigger problem. Oh no, I made a little mistake, touched the curb on the middle of turn 8, and it's still a little bit wet there on the inside, and just upset the car on the brakes, and bang, she was on its way in. But if you're getting any bright ideas, quite dear, I'm doing with them. Fast as you can, baby, wait, watch me, I'll be out.
Little bit of everything, and it's if we can transform that, put that over to the top 15 for tomorrow and come away a little faster time, then we can see it through.
Yeah, I guess so, but you know, I don't think we you get to a street race, all of a sudden you gain a heap of talent, and you go to a place like Darwin and you lose a heap of talent. It's just some tracks our cars really aren't quite up to speed in the way of handling. We're really working hard on that. And, you know, you get to other tracks and our cars are equal or better than anybody else's. So, I mean, we've got to get rid of those bad tracks that we have, those bad races. We can always drive. It's just a matter of getting the car set up, and sometimes we struggle.
You were mentioning that you actually saw Redditch and Strange Cross, and you're still coming back
to hit. Yeah, well, I was coming down the back straight and looking at one of the big TV monitors that they've got around the track. And, I actually saw him spun, and I'm thinking, oh, geez, you know, I wasn't actually thinking about, yes, I'm on pole. I was actually thinking, you know, don't hit anything, because, you know, I know how hard the guys work, and really Paul's done a fantastic job this weekend, and that's really unfortunate what happened. You know, that's the way it goes. Next time it'll be, you know, it could be anybody else's turn next time.